Let's get after it on a Tuesday afternoon. Hopefully you're staying dry. Less than 24 hours away from Canada, going up against Belgium at the World Cup. A lot coming up here on The People Show. I'm Bick Nizar, coming to you live from the Kintec studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, supported by over 1,500 five-star Google reviews. Find your perfect fit at kintec.net. You can always chime in, be part of the show in the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox. 650-650, the smart alternative. Visit Dunbar Lumber on Bridge Street in Ladner or Arbutus in Vancouver, online at dunbarlumber.com. Full show today. We'll get to Bick's best, the power rankings ahead of week 12 for the NFL. Mark Schofield will join us. But every Tuesday, we talk to Yannick Hansen, longtime NHLer in Vancouver Canuck. Let's get to it right now. Yannick, how are you?
I'm good. Good. Happy to get some soccer in now.
Yeah. Were you up early this AM? Timing.
I was not up early to watch Denmark. Fortunately, it was a bad game as I could read my way through, but definitely saw France run over Australia. So yeah, no, there's a lot of soccer in the mornings right now. So happy about that.
Actually, we're getting psyched up for, you know, international soccer. I do want to ask you, because we're it looks like we're not going to see another World Cup of hockey, and it's going to be 11 years if we're lucky, since we've seen a best on best tournament. International hockey, you know, how do you view what's happened of why we haven't been able to get this tournament underway?
Obviously, a lot of things going on in the world that
sure.
are out of our hands. It should probably happen, and when they do it, it's something that draws fans because they like that. Obviously, there is Canada is probably a little bit removed from everybody else, but it's always nice to see if somebody can pick them off that pedestal. So again, there's a lot of pride that goes into it when you play for your country, and again. This type of tournament we're talking about right now is the one, like the Olympic, that the players want to do. They want to mm-hmm. play. The World Championship is seen as, we're out of the NHL now. The Stanley Cup finals here, so let's go do this for the younger guys, and the older guys are like, oh, maybe I have a little bit of an injury, so I don't have to go. So it's nice to see these big tournaments, whether it's the Olympic, whether it's was World Cup we saw in 16, because it is something that the guys do want to do.
You know, currently you kind of mentioned, like, look, there's bigger real world politics that go into the decisions of how to get the World Cup off in 2024, understandably. But, you know, previous years we've seen the Olympics kind of be a hurdle, and the NHL has, you know, gone away from that model of getting an international tournament in. You know, where does the failure lie for you of why this hasn't happened?
Money. Money talks. You asked the league to shut down for 3 weeks and not get paid anything. The World Cup of Hockey, they make some money on it. I believe last time the players split it with the NHL and something else kind of thing. So that's why they were a little more lenient that way, where the Olympic, they're expecting you to come and then you pay for everything, insurance and all these things. And like, if it's my players, my wallet, I'd be reluctant to let them go as well, because it is a business for them too. And then you are risking your marketable stars, you are risking your playoff lives to play for their countries, and it's different for players from owners. So that's probably where it lies at the end of it. If it isn't financially feasible for them, why do it? And again, players, we only have so much say because we are employed as well.
Talking to Yannick Hansen here on The People's Show, a longtime Vancouver Canuck. I imagine you were busy this weekend with the Pro-Am as well on the ice.
Yeah, we were very busy. It was a phenomenal event they put on there, 3 days Friday with the lunch, the draft, and then the 2 days of games out in North Surrey. So it's always fantastic to take part of these things. You kind of just mark your calendar. Okay, I got to go do this charity event here in November. Then you show up and you hear these stories from these families, and it touches you. So it was great to be a part of. We had a lot of laughs, a lot of smiles. So it was a phenomenal weekend.
Has it changed at all for you? Because we know about the work the Canucks do in the community, you know, while you were an active player, and what it means to you now that you're part of the alumni.
We're more involved now.
Yeah.
When we were players, we show up for the what's it called, Dice and Ice, and these 1-2 hour events, shake some hands, and some money gets collected. This is different. You're rubbing shoulders with all these people that do all the hard work, make sure money gets raised. You're seeing the families that are getting touched by it as well. So it's a lot more hands-on than when we were actively playing.
Yeah, it was a fantastic event. I believe you were on Team Sportsnet as well, right?
I was. I did warn them that if they weren't picking me, I'm not picking up you guys' calls anymore. So I think it was a given right off the bat that that they were picking me. They were picking a little bit later, but again, as I started dropping from the top three and down in 4, 5, 6, I knew that they were right around the corner.
Your draft slot was very secure. Again, if you want more information on what Canucks Autism Network is doing, go to CanucksAutism.ca. Let's talk about what's happening on the ice, not with you wearing the jersey, the current guys. We're seeing the same thing happen all over again. Again, another multi-goal lead. This time, though, it was a divisional opponent, right? Like, some of the losses that they've had this season, they've been out of conference, and you can kind of deal with those. This one is a divisional opponent last night.
Yeah, it's a little bit of deja vu. Again, LA, they get the win. They score 4 goals. They keep them to 1. But I'm pretty sure if you dive into the numbers, they're getting outchanced heavily in that game as well. Demko was great. He was what we remembered him. Against Vegas, a little more iffy, and boom, the other team scores 5. But again, it's the way these goals are scored. Mm-hmm. It's individual mistakes. It's mistakes you can clear up. It's not winning your one-on-one battle. And I think it was Luke Shen who said it in one of the comments that, like, this isn't systems. It's mm-hmm. not coaching. It's one-on-one. It's guys winning those battles. And no coach, no matter who you're talking about bringing in, is going to win that one-on-one battle behind your own net or in front of your net. He's not going to box out for you or lift a stick in front of the net. No, that's the players, and those are the goals that get scored. And it doesn't matter who you bring in to change whatever it is you want to change. If guys aren't winning these battles on the ice, we'll keep seeing this stuff.
You know, I haven't had a chance to speak to you in 2-3 weeks here, and I was preparing, you know, 3 weeks ago, you know, to talk about a player in Oliver Ekman-Larsson who, look, I can understand when there's physical decline, players get older, that's what's going to happen, but it felt like, you know, fundamentals, you know, out of position, and then you kind of mentioned it there. It's like, these aren't systems things that are happening. Can anything be built upon? Like, when you're looking at this team, not just one player I kind of mentioned there, just in general, like, this is guys putting bodies on people. These are basics, and we're not even talking about complex tactics or strategies. Can you build anything when the basics just aren't being done?
No. In a short answer, no, you can't. Because you need this buy-in. You need the guys to play for each other instead of themselves. And when guys take the easy route, try to cheat, try to score, that's not for the team. That's for themselves. I want to do this. I'm going to look good. In the season, I'm going to get a better deal. That's not going to win you hockey games. So until they start doing things right, we'll keep seeing this. And again, it's not like they don't spend the money on the Canucks. They're up against the cap, but you're at the bottom of the league. If you're Columbus and you have 20, 25 million in cap space, who cares? Because that's where you end up. You're at a disadvantage. But you're getting paid. You're getting paid handsomely. You got to find a way. It's that simple, in my opinion.
You've talked about that a lot, where at the end of season, look, when the season's over, you know, guys start looking out for themselves, and it's that dance towards the end of the 82nd game. And we're at game 19, and we're starting to see some of that left here. You know, is that a sign that, okay, it's over? And what does that feel like? Because considering we've got 63 games here to go.
Yeah, fortunately, last year they were able to turn that around, and you still have that feeling, okay, they can make it. This year, I don't know if you can come out and do the same thing. I mean, we were shocked last year. Obviously, we keep seeing it every single night that they can score, and it is really, really hard to score in this league, and it's mm-hmm. hard to score consistently. They have done that. So you keep sitting on the edge and thinking, if they only figure this out, if they get the defense sorted out, they'll win a multitude of games if they can keep scoring these 3 and 4 goals a night, because there's no way you should be giving up that many goals. It is, like I said, it is hard to score in the NHL. And Canucks are making it look easy. They're scoring in bunches against some of the best teams in the league, but you can't find a way to eliminate this. Well, then you're at a loss.
Okay. Well, what's harder then, scoring goals like at the rate that they are, or just being a team that's mentally engaged to do the things that are right?
Well, in my opinion, it's easier to just do them right.
Right.
If it was easy to score, I'd have been a 40 goal scorer my entire career. I'd still be playing, but that's not the case. The defense, it takes commitment. It takes everybody being on the same page. It takes everybody putting the team in front of themselves, because that is what you're doing. You're blocking shots. Luke Shen taking one off the head, that hurts. It's not going to show up on the score sheet. It's not going to get you more money in July. No, the goal you score will get you more money, but that goal when you score it and it's 6-2, it's not going to make a difference. The block shot will make a difference. So it's these little things where, unless all of these guys are pulling in the same direction and have a common goal, and I assume they have a common goal, and that's in the first case to make the playoff, but they don't play like it. And it's one thing to say that we're a team and we have these goals and we're going to do everything we can to do it. But when you see the product and the execution and the effort level, it makes you second guess that a little bit and thinking, oh, maybe these are just empty words.
The other thing that kind of strikes me, and it felt like, you know, Vegas last night, you know, they started to get the puck down low, and you know, when you look at these come from behind wins, it just doesn't look like teams have a lot of fear going against the Vancouver Canucks. And I'm not saying, hey, they got to start running guys, but it just always feels like every team believes that they can get a comeback against Vancouver for whatever reason. You know, considering that they are a team that can score goals and make it difficult or make that comeback difficult. But when a team decides to just ramp it up, it feels like they can get their chances however they want.
Yeah, because Vancouver's happy to trade chances. Best example I have is the Buffalo game. You're up 5-2, and you're still happy enough to trade chances with Buffalo at that point. So you're okay with taking a 2-on-1, giving a 2-on-1. And if you're the team down, you love that, because it means every time you step on the ice, you might score a goal. Where if you have to scratch and claw for your scoring chances, like, there's no way we're going to get 3 goals. So you got to find a way to play a boring style of game when you're up in these games. I'm not talking about sitting back, but we don't need to be trading chances, because these offensively gifted guys that every team has, all they're looking for are opportunities, and easy opportunities are their best, because it's like, oh, we jump over the boards and here's a 2-on-1 or a 3-on-2. Like, we don't have to work. We don't have to exert any extra effort in order to get these chances. We don't have to fight in front of the net, pitchfork goalies, getting cross-checked in the back of your head in order to just maybe poke a puck in on the goalie. No, these chances that you keep giving up, it gives teams life. So instead of sucking it out of the game, you're fueling that fire, and they're sitting on the bench on the edge. It's like, next shift, we're going to get one here, boys. And then they just keep rolling at you, and then they get that one. And then all of a sudden, oh, well, these guys, they've been giving up goals left and right all season. They're going to do it tonight again. And then you believe in yourself. Your legs feel fresher. You're skating downhill, and you're going to get the second one as well. It's one of those things where that snowball, once it starts rolling, it doesn't stop.
This might be difficult for you to answer, because you're not always at the rink, and you know it is tough for us
to
hear. Yeah, I'll try to be nice to you there. But you know, it's tough for us to even answer, because we're so high up, and you can kind of hear it too. But you know, when we talk about the team defense, and you're talking about pulling on the same rope, you know, one thing that stands out to me is, like, I don't hear them a lot on the ice. It's one thing to be just smart defensively and know where you have to go. How important is just communication amongst 5 guys? Can you communicate to make things easier? And how tough is that with how fast the game is going?
It's always like a tuck and pull. Sometimes you need it, sometimes you don't. It depends how well you know each other, how well you play with each other. some lines that get put together are new. They need to talk a lot. Some that's been playing together for years, they don't need to talk at all. Like you, when I play with the Twins, I know anywhere I get it, you throw it as hard as you can on the ice behind the net, and one of them will be there. I don't need to look. I don't need to hear them. I know they're there. When they have it, I go to the front of the net. I don't need to yell for it, maybe a little tap, and they know I'm there. But again, when there's this much rotation and lineup, new guys coming in, all these things, you need to have communication. You need to be yelling, this is where I need the puck, because you don't have eyes in the back of the head. And we always say the game is easier up top. You see it, you see the holes, you see the patterns, all these things. So when you remove yourself from the game and you sit up top, it looks easy. The game is not as fast, the puck is never bouncing. So I understand it. It is easier to sit from the outside and judge them, because when you're on the ice and guys are skating fast and you might get hit and you don't really know where guys are, it is a difficult game. So that's where communication comes in spades, when you aren't on the same wavelength, if you will.
Talking to Yannick Hansen, a longtime Vancouver Canuck and NHLer here on the People Show, as we do every Tuesday to kick off the show. Thatcher Demko last night. Now, again, we talked about the play in front of him and not picking up bodies. But it did feel like, you know, he had a strong game on Friday against LA and started the game really well. And then just somewhere along the way, it just slipped. And, you know, the goal that gets called back, that's a rebound that he lets right into the prime real estate. You know, is he going to be equipped to get his game back? Now, he's got to take care of what he can in front. But I just wonder, like, what his confidence level is, what's happening in front of him, too.
Yeah, that's probably the easiest fix, if you will. If he gets his stuff in order to what he has been playing to in previous years, they'll improve immensely. But like you mentioned, and even I think it's the tying goal or the winning goal, that's him as well. It's a mistake he makes. He shoots it up, he hits the forechecker, gets turned over, boom, it's in the back of the net. It's one of those goals where you said there's no systems, there's no coach that's going to correct that. That is the individual mistake that comes back to haunt you. And it just sucks when it's your goalie, because there's nobody defending him at the end. He's the last line. But it's one of those things where a little mistake here, another mistake there, and it's the deciding game. Like, hockey is a game of mistakes, and whatever team makes the least amount tend to come out on top. And right now we're seeing too many individual mistakes that hurt the team, whether it's something as simple as getting a puck out or it's lifting a stick, tying a stick up. The first two Vegas goals are great examples of not really tying up the guy's stick in front of the net or moving, boxing him out. Gets a piece of it and it's in the back of the net. And those are sometimes easier said than done to clear, because sometimes it's a big boy standing there and you can't just move them. But that's where, well, then you take their stick and then they can't score. So it's too many of these little, somewhat easy mistakes to clean up that will affect your team immensely.
We talk a lot about how the importance of American Thanksgiving is for the NHL standings and trying to get into the playoffs. When you played, were you aware of the importance of what that means, or did it just not matter and it just fold into the next game to try to get a result?
No, we normally had a banner at that point anyway, so it was not something we looked into too much. I heard it later on while I in my first couple of years, knowing that it was. Yeah, we were fortunate. Again, the division was very weak for many years, and we had all of these gimme games, Colorado, Edmonton, that we'd win 5 out of 6, if that, on any given year. So we had a ton of these gimme games that were just, like, for sure points. I say this as a for sure. Obviously, they weren't, but, I mean, you remember back then how it was. So it wasn't really like we needed to be at this point in order to be in a good spot. We'd break it down and say we have this segment here and we need, what was it? We need every 10 games, we need 12 points. That'll put you at 96, at 80, and then we have two games to do the if you need more points. And that was kind of the standard for making the playoff, those 95, 96 points. So you break it down like that instead of saying, oh, this is where we need to be by Thanksgiving. But obviously being 5 games below 500, that's not where you need to be in that standard either.
Yeah, the reason I ask is because I'm just curious, like, how deflating these next couple of days could be. And obviously they need to find a spark at some point, but, you know, at some point, does it become too difficult for them to find that?
I hope not. You hope that they play all the way through, no matter what it looks like. Again, these guys are playing for contracts. Again, you still need them doing well if you want to trade them at the deadline. You can't have players going in on 10, 20 goal games with no goals if you're looking to trade them and get something of value. So again, it is tough to see, and especially when you see the stats, because that speaks a little bit more than just like you look at the standings and, well, they're only 5 points, 6 points out of a playoff spot. That's fairly manageable. But then you start looking back, and if you're not in a playoff spot by this next weekend here, you're well, you're not making the playoffs in 9 out of 10 times or whatever it is. So it's a wet cloth to get slapped in the face, that's for sure.
It's interesting because you mentioned, like, hey, some guys still have to produce and play for contracts, which is kind of, you know, in direct conflict of, you know, play as a team and all that sort of stuff. And some guys are getting points. Like, Brock Besser's got 12 points in 13 games. And I'm just curious from, like, management's perspective, are you looking at this like, okay, some guys are getting points and maybe they retain value, but if you watch the games, it's really, like, not cohesive team play? How would you view this from a manager's point of view?
Yeah, so if you're the team taking on these guys, you're hoping that putting them in your locker room, your culture, they will fit in, and then, yeah, their production will go down a little bit from what you're seeing, but again, they can't provide that offense. So that's probably what you're hoping for. I'm not expecting if somebody picks up Bo Horvat, say Boston or Colorado, that he keeps scoring at the same pace as McDavid. That's not what you're going to be expecting from him. You're going to be expecting him to step into a role probably below some of those guys that are playing ahead of him, and then providing some secondary scoring, where right now it's obviously primary scoring, or anybody else in that sense. And from Canucks' perspective, you're trying to inflate these numbers. So you're the GM and the coach obviously got to be on the same page here. But again, you're looking to put Brock or whoever you're looking to move with Petey, somebody who will make him look better than he is, get him more points than he would otherwise. So when you're going to whatever team it is that you're looking to move him to, he's like, look at this, Brock is a 25-goal scorer, and we want so-and-so for him. So it's obviously two sides of the coin, and one is trying to make a deal, and the other one is trying to run away with the store. So you gotta find a fine line here on both sides of that coin.
He is Yannick Hansen. We hear him every Tuesday here on the People Show and Friday on Canuck Central. What did you think of France? They look pretty good.
They look phenomenal, which is not good because Denver's got them coming out here next game. So they've actually beat them the last couple of times they played them in nation leagues and these games. So they have some success against them, but you're watching Mbappe run around out there. And it's one thing to be faster than another guy on a soccer pitch, but doing it with the ball is almost impossible. But it's like he's got a cheat code. Like, he's so fast, he's so shifty, and he creates so much stuff. So I don't know if our right defender, I can't recall him off the top of my head who that is, but he's going to be busy. And obviously they got more strings than him, but again, and they lost Benzema. So it's one of those things that if France can put it together like they did against Australia, which obviously is not the opponent they're going to beat when they come further into this tournament, then they can beat anybody.
Well, it could be one of the matches of the tournament. Excited to see it. Yannick, appreciate it as always. We'll talk next week.
Yeah, my pleasure. Take care.
Yannick Hansen joining us here on The People Show again every Tuesday and Fridays on Canuck Central, presentation of Magnuson Auto Group, Metro Ford, Port Coquitlam, and Magnuson Ford in Abbotsford, on both sides of the Fraser to serve you. Bick Nizar here on The People Show. We'll get to Bick's best on the other side. Excited for a big day, though. Sportsnet 650 Sunday, partnering with Match Eatery and Public House at Cascades Casino in Delta. Myself, Randy Janda, and our street team going to be there at Sunday, December 4th from 1 to 5 for all the marquee matchups. Match Eatery and Public House offering the social traditions of a neighborhood pub with the high energy of a sports bar. Stop by for a chance to win a smart speaker, get some 650 gear, and also hang out with myself and Randeep. We'll have a pair of Canucks tickets for you to win as well, and a pair of tickets to the Seahawks game on December 11th. Match Eatery and Public House located at the new Cascades Casino next to the Massey Tunnel. A lot more on the way here on The People Show. Back at it here on The People's Show, coming to you live from the Kintech Studio. Vic Nazar, you can always be part of it, 650-650. A lot of good reaction coming in for Yannick Hansen. If you missed any of it, you can always go back on the podcast and listen to Yannick, The People's Show. Go subscribe, five-star reviews only, as always. Let's talk to our other Tuesday regulars. He joins us from SB Nation, Mark Schofield. Mark, how are you?
I'm doing well, Vic. How are you, my friend? Been a little while.
I know. Been like 3 weeks here since I've done a Tuesday show, so happy to be back in the saddle and a lot to get into coming off week 11. You know, usually we critique some guys and how come it's not working. I want to start with something positive. Joe Burrow succeeding without Ja'Marr Chase. You know, some receivers have such a gravity and it makes quarterbacks better. How is Joe Burrow living life right now without as his star wide receiver?
Well, I think, Vic, what's been interesting about Cincinnati, if you think back to the way this season began, right, a lot of the conversation around the Cincinnati Bengals, particularly early in the year, was they couldn't figure out the cover two world that we're living in, right, all these split safety coverages. And they had such a strange sort of run-pass ratio. It was clear what they were doing in the passing game or what they were doing generally offensively. You know, if Burrow was under center, they were going to run the football. If Burrow was in the shotgun, they were going to throw it. But in the week sort of, I'd say really November and actually back to October, even before Chase got hurt, they started to figure out ways to attack downfield in the passing game against those two high looks. Burrow was a lot more confident attacking the middle of the field. I think, you know, he found some opportunities to, you know, receivers like Tyler Boyd and even times T. Higgins that sort of gave him the confidence to attack that area of the field. And then they've sort of figured out a run game out of shotgun, what has certainly helped them because they've broken some of their own tendencies. And then when Chase goes down, you've seen, you know, the way they've gotten Joe Mixon involved in the passing game. Certainly the way they've moved Higgins around, some of his best throws, Joe Burrow's this past week, came with Higgins as, you know, a slot receiver. Sometimes Higgins aligned as the number three receiver to the trips, whereas before Chase went down, that was kind of the role that Chase was in, and you'd have Higgins usually as your boundary, your X type of receiver. And so they've sort of broken some of their own tendencies, had to do that anyway because of what we were seeing earlier in the year with the stuff against too high. But then with Chase going down, now you have Higgins, you move him around a little bit more. That's created some opportunities for Higgins on different routes and different concepts from different areas of the field against different types of corners. And so that's really what's come together for the Bengals over the past couple of weeks, figuring out the things that they needed to do, breaking some of their own tendencies, and then finding a different role for Higgins with Ja'Marr Chase injured with his hip injury.
The other guy I want to talk about, and we've talked about, you know, Dak Prescott coming back into the lineup after Cooper Rush, and they felt like they got the schematic version of it all right. And now, you know, it feels like they're getting the personnel usage right, a little bit more Tony Pollard, and it feels like they just got a little bit more burst that offense. They explode over the weekend versus Minnesota. And there's all this talk of, you know, maybe Odell joining them. Just where can this offense slide in as far as where the hierarchy is for best offenses in the league?
Yeah, I mean, look, in the past hour or so, we've seen the Cowboys' main Twitter account talk about, you know, Dak Prescott making his pitch for Odell. I mean, they're certainly taking that swing to try to add Odell to their roster. And receiving depth has been an issue for the Cowboys dating back to even before training camp began. People were talking about, you know, they needed depth at receiver. They needed to take some swings in free agency. And so it wouldn't surprise me to see Odell end up there, and it certainly doesn't surprise me to see them moving after him. But with respect to this offense and what it can be, you know, putting the Odell issue to the side, I think, like you said, they had the schematic components figured out, like we talked about weeks ago. The player usage part of it, I think, has been big. More snaps, more opportunities for Tony Pollard has been big. You know, he adds a different dimension to that, both that run game and that pass game, you know, because he can do some things out of the backfield as a receiver that Ezekiel Elliott, you know, might not have to his game right now. And you look at, you know, the touchdown from late in the first half. It's just a swing route, really, you know, with Pollard swinging to the right side of the field. But his ability to catch, get upfield, accelerate, burst, you know, the kinds of things that maybe Ezekiel Elliott doesn't do as well right now, that adds a different component to this offense. And then you have to talk about Prescott and what he does. You know, I've seen some people, Mina Kimes, for example, talked earlier this week on ESPN about how he's one of the best quarterbacks in the league pre-snap. And you can see that play out on plays like the Pollard touchdown. He's getting to his fifth read in the progression, you know, and with the way this game is played, with how fast that has to happen, you don't get to your fifth read on a route concept if you haven't done some work pre-snap, if you haven't figured some things out before the ball is snapped to put yourself in a position to get from 1 to 2 to 3 to 4, eventually to 5. So it's all coming together for this team right now. Now, in terms of where they might stack up league-wide, I think, you know, I know we're going to talk about the Kansas City Chiefs. Mm-hmm. That's an extremely explosive offense. I know we're probably going to talk about, or maybe we won't because they were on a bye, but the Miami Dolphins and what they've done this year. I've been very impressed with that offense. I've been very impressed with Tua. I think you look at what that offense has done and what Tua has done, it's been impressive to watch. Certainly the Buffalo Bills, the Philadelphia Eagles, and the way they can sort of get after you a couple of different ways. But then you sort of get into that next tier, and the Dallas Cowboys are at the top of that group.
I do want to ask about Mahomes because it felt like, look, another good punch then from the Chargers to really push them. And we saw it against the Titans too. Now, he did it with his legs, and it just felt like on Sunday night, he's so quick at diagnosing stuff, like the game-winning touchdown. It felt like he had so many options built in, and maybe he's just reading the one safety, and it's like, here we go. We'll just go to Kelce again.
Yeah, I mean, again, Mahomes and Bick, you and I have talked about this for years now. Mm-hmm. You know, we grade him on a different curve, you know, just because of the way that he plays the position and the throws that he can make. But you're right. Like, he works similar to Prescott. He works through progressions, through options, through decisions so quickly. You know, the throws to Kelce underneath where it's just, I know I've got the matchup I want. You know, whether they're in single high, whether they're in two high, it doesn't matter. We've put Kelce in a position to be successful via formation, via alignment. You know, that touchdown, it's one of the things that they do so well. It's a Y ISO, and you really sort of, you know, force the defense to decide, okay, how are you going to treat him? Are you going to treat him like a corner? Are you going to treat him like a receiver? Excuse me. Are you going to put a corner on him? Are you going to treat him like a traditional tight end and put a safety on him? That's what they did in this play with Derwin James. But that's a matchup that Mahomes trusts. But I think what's even scarier, Vic, about this offense, you know, the throw to Forston, you know, that seam route along the right side of the field, just an absolutely absurd throw. But it came out of 13 offensive personnel, three tight ends. You know, and this is something that Andy Reid, Eric Bieniemy started sprinkling in the past couple of weeks as they've had some injuries to the receiving room. These three tight end packages where, like we just talked about with Kelce, you put him in a Y ISO alignment. You're forcing the defense to declare both what they're doing coverage-wise and to show you exactly what they're going to do in terms of covering him. But with three tight ends in the game, you think, oh, we're going to treat this like, you know, a run scheme. We're going to put, you know, four down linemen, three linebackers in the game. That's what the Jacksonville Jaguars did against this look a couple weeks ago. Chargers, they went in a different direction. They treated it as a no, we're going to stay in nickel. We're going to have five defensive backs in the game. But they were still able to attack downfield by getting a matchup that they like, getting forced and isolated, coming across the field in motion, you know, against a smaller defender. And that gave Mahomes the ability to sort of rip that throw over his head. And so they figured out so many different ways to attack you. And a couple of weeks ago, they also got Kadarius Toney involved. And so we grade Mahomes on this different curve, and yes, he has Andy Reid and Eric Bieniemy doing things like the use of 13 personnel to put him in a position to be successful. But his ability to diagnose, his ability to make any throw to any area of the field with the appropriate velocity, touch, placement, whatever the situation requires from any platform, still is among the best, if not the best, in the league.
Talking to Mark Schofield from SB Nation here on The People's Show. And now the start of the season for Lamar Jackson was a lot of fireworks, you know, 300 yards and passing, and then he was dropping another 100 rushing. And they've picked up wins here, four in a row and five of the last six. But you kind of go through it. Ever since that Buffalo game, it's a bit of a struggle to even just get to 250 total yards for Lamar, passing and on the ground. Now, I know Rashad Bateman's been out and he might not come back. Is that all that it is, that they just don't have perimeter weapons and teams can just increase the bodies in the box or at least in the middle of the field? Like, what else is happening with that Ravens offense?
Yeah, I mean, I do think that's part of it. And that was kind of a question mark about this Baltimore offense was, okay, Mark Andrews is one of the game's best tight ends. Isaiah Likely, I absolutely loved him coming out of Coastal Carolina. I think he's going to be their next moved weapon at the tight end position with his athleticism, his background as a receiver, playing a receiver in high school, at Everett High School in Eastern Massachusetts. So those two players can sort of work the middle of the field and give them something down the middle as well against, you know, even against cover two, cover four looks where they can attack between those safeties. But the question was always beyond that, expanding the field, expanding the playbook, attacking outside the numbers, which is an area of the field that Lamar needs time and rhythm and anticipation to throw. That's what he's always relied on, dating back to his days in Louisville, where, you know, throws outside the numbers, you need more time and rhythm and anticipation to those. You know, with Andrews in and out of the lineup, with Bateman out of the lineup as well, it's really sort of restricted what they can do in the passing game. It's really restricted what they can do, you know, outside along the boundaries. You know, this past week against Carolina, that's an athletic defense. You know, you look at, you know, from the first play of the game where he's having to throw on the move and finding something late in the down because he's being pressured. You know, the interception, you know, where he's trying to target Mark Andrews on a quick little shallow and kind of gets tipped because they're spying him. Because, of course, with Lamar Jackson, you're always worried about that run threat. Teams like Carolina, athletic defenses have figured out some ways to take away what he wants to do, to get into throwing lanes underneath. And Lamar has a very sort of, you know, it's a snap throw in motion by the ear that sometimes lends itself to throws being tipped and deflected at the line of scrimmage, like on that interception from Sunday. And so there are things that teams are figuring out. They've had some injuries to work through. And, of course, the issue with attacking outside the numbers and vertically to receivers was something we were worried about going into the season. But generally speaking, he's still one of the toughest quarterbacks to game plan for. You know, even with these concerns, like you said, they're still stacking wins, and it's still a quarterback that if I'm a defensive coordinator, I don't want to see him on the schedule because you have to do so many different things to prepare for Lamar Jackson. And so they're stacking wins, they're winning games, their defense has gotten better. I wouldn't want to play this team in the postseason. And I think that's what most people would tell you about the Ravens and Lamar Jackson.
Talking to Mark Schofield from SB Nation, QB analyst and national writer at SB Nation for the NFL. I want to give you five names here, quarterbacks. And the way I want to frame this is, if you interchanged any of these quarterbacks, would their team records be any different? And I don't know, QB wins, we overlook that, and or we're past that conversation. But just in general, like, would Kirk Cousins on the Raiders be any different than Derek Carr on the Vikings, or Matt Ryan and Jimmy Garoppolo and Ryan Tannehill? These five quarterbacks, it just feels like they're stable, but the environment around them is what's the interesting thing and dictates their success.
All right, so you had Cousins, Carr, Garoppolo, Tannehill. Who's the fifth?
Matt Ryan.
Ryan. Yeah, I mean, the Ryan situation is interesting because I think watching him this year, the concern on Ryan coming in was the arm strength and the lack of velocity. And you can see that on film. He doesn't have the velocity and the ability to target tighter throw-in lanes and to really sort of drive through throws that he once had. And I think that's a limiting factor. So I kind of almost want to set him aside because I think with where
sure.
he is right now, it's going to be different. The three that I think are kind of, well, Carr and Tannehill, I think, are pretty interchangeable right now. Cousins has impressed me at times. You know, the numbers in the game against Washington, for example, they probably don't back it up. But when I was studying that game and breaking that down, I thought it was one of the better games I've seen from him. You know, even though his QBR was sort of middle of the pack for that week, his passer rating was middle of the pack for that week, some of the throws he made, particularly the vertical passing game, really sort of stood out. So I think Cousins is probably the guy that in this group has maybe set himself apart a little bit. Of course, the quintessential guy you win with is Garoppolo, and he's in such a great situation right now. You look at that game last night, you know, studying that this morning and actually wrote about it for SB Nation, the way that Shanahan has found, you know, concepts with Samuel and McCaffrey to almost make them interchangeable type players. He had three plays last night where one of those guys was running an option route from the slot. The other was going to be part of a spot concept out of the backfield. A couple of times it was McCaffrey running that option route out of the slot with Samuel running that spot route out of the backfield. But then he flipped it, and you've got Samuel in the slot. The fact that you've got two players, different types of athletes, right? One's a wide receiver, one's a running back. But Shanahan is finding ways to get those guys involved where he's almost flipping what they can do. It's extremely creative. There is a throw late in the game on a 3rd and 2. It's just a shallow route to Deebo Samuel in that X ISO alignment to the right side of the field. And you've got McCaffrey as the running back shaded to that side running the wheel route. And so since it's 3rd and 2, Garoppolo just throws the shallow. They move the chains. But, Vic, we both know what's coming. At some point, they're going to throw that wheel route to McCaffrey over the top,
right,
hoping to get him lined up, matched up against the linebacker. So Garoppolo is in such a good situation. All he has to do right now is be a point guard. But the thing is, he's an elite point guard. You know, when everything's clicking for him, when he knows, look, this is the matchup, this is where I'm going with the football, what it's snap, catch, and throw, he's great at that. It's when he has to create off of structure, which is where it sort of goes to pieces for him. But with what they have right now with Deebo, you know, with McCaffrey, obviously with George Kittle, the other weapons that they have, he's a very good to elite point guard in the ideal situation.
We'll let you go on this one, as we do every week. The throw of the week for you in week 11.
Yeah, it was the Mahomes throw to Fortune.
Right.
I mean, to get it, I think it was something like 20. It was a 29% or 30% completion probability according to NFL's Next Gen stats, because the coverage, there was like less than 2 yards of separation. You've got to get it over that underneath defender. And remember, he's throwing this to the third string tight end, and he throws it up the right seam, and it maybe gets, what, 10, 12, maybe 15 yards off the ground? I mean, it's an absolute frozen rope. And I always say this when I come on. I feel like I say it every time, but we do grade Mahomes on a different curve, because that throw almost, while we all recognize that it was kind of absurd, anybody else makes that throw and is probably leading every single, you know, sports center,
yeah,
you know, Fox Sports 1, Undisputed, whatever show you watch, they're leading with that throw. Mahomes is kind of like, yep, okay, he did it again. Yeah, this is what we kind of expect from this guy. But every time I then sit down and study him, whether it's a, you know, Monday morning or a Tuesday morning, I just walk away amazed at how well he plays this position and the throws that he can make from any platform. It's just week in and week out, he just blows my mind.
Mark, we appreciate it as always, at Mark Schofield on Twitter, and go check out that Garoppolo piece as well. Thanks a lot, man.
Thanks so much, my friend. We'll talk soon, buddy. Have a great week.
Absolutely. Our guy, at Mark Schofield, joining us here from SB Nation. All right, it's time for the People's Picks, brought to you by Play Now Sports. Every game will feel like the big game when you bet with Play Now Sports, brought to you by BCLC. All right, it's Tuesday, so we break out the ticker, and it's Guess the Lines. Dom's got a handful of games here for me. Again, 1-4-1 last week in Big Six. Let's try to find some value here.
It's Thanksgiving weekend, too, down in the States.
Right.
So we're going to run through the three matchups there.
Okay.
To start, it's Bills at Lions. Bills at Lions.
Bills at Lions. Lions win big. Bills win a close one. 8 points, albeit, in their other stadium. Which is actually the home venue this week. Let's go. It's got to be over a touchdown. Can't give them a full credit. Not double digits, though. Let's go 9.5 for the
Ooh,
Lions. Nice.
Good
okay.
job.
Okay.
Giants at Cowboys. Giants at Cowboys.
Giants and Cowboys. So Giants just get worked by the Lions. And, man, Dallas just destroys Minnesota. Divisional game, 7.5.
Nine.
All right.
That's not the German no. That's the number 9. Patriots at Vikings.
Patriots at Vikings. So some of the shine probably comes off of the Vikings a little bit. So you wouldn't go full field goal in this spot. But they are the home team. But Patriots, sneakily 6-4 right now. I'll just go -2.5 here.
For who?
For the Vikings. Nice.
You could have gone either way there. I didn't know.
I think that's the right number.
Let's do this. Ravens at Jaguars.
Ravens at Jaguars. Again, we're just talking about the Ravens. They're winning, and they actually are covering, but are they impressive? We'll do the power ranks in just a minute here. I actually downgraded the Ravens, even though they're winning. But still, it's at the Jaguars, coming off of a bye. Give me 3.5 points as road favorites.
4. You're close.
Okay.
And last one, Bears at Jets. Bears at Jets.
Your Jets. You just got to shoehorn them in.
We don't know what Fields' situation is yet.
But do we know, like, who's starting?
For the Jets?
Yeah.
We don't.
So it could be anything right now.
Could be anything right now.
So if we don't know what Fields' situation is, we don't know who's starting for the Jets.
What's the line?
Give me Jets minus 3.5.
You were close. Jets minus 4.5.
Interesting. I feel like there's a bit of a reflection of maybe Fields isn't starting there. But that's a confusing line.
It is a confusing
line. I was kind of banking on Fields not being around. All right, let's get to Bick's Best here as well. Top 10 teams in the NFL. It's the power ranks. I'm calling it Bick's Best. Vikings are out of the top 10. They just slide out, mainly because the Seahawks were on bye. I couldn't change anything about the Seahawks. They remain at 10. They're on the bye. We'll see if the Vikings can get back in after they got mollywopped by the Cowboys. Yeah, that's a word. Titans moving up into the top 10. They get a result. Short week against the Packers. They got a great coaching staff. They have a team identity. This is also an exercise in finding team identity. The Titans have one, and this might be their ceiling, but that's a tough out, man. I do not want to see the Titans, if you're an AFC team, in the playoffs. They come in at number 9. Number 8 is the Ravens. They slide a great deal here. 13 points against the Panthers. This offense, maybe we're starting to see some limitations. Great explanation there by Mark Schofield. Again, if you missed it, you can grab it on the pod. You're starting to see some limitations, even though that defense is really starting to improve. I got them at number 8. Miami Dolphins are on bye. They hang it at number 7 still. The Cincinnati Bengals, Joe Burrow's doing it without Ja'Marr Chase. That is impressive. This defense is still very good. I know they got lit up a bit against Steelers, but it's a strong defense with not a lot of name brand power, but they're just a very cohesive unit that does it all together. 49ers come in at 5, a little bit of an upgrade for them. Jimmy G's actually playing really well right now. Again, Mark kind of detailing it there of how they're making all these weapons work for him and clear up the clutter for him so he doesn't have to process as much. When you have that much, defense is going to be defined for you. The Eagles come in at number 4. They slide a little bit. Another sketchy win there. They get the W, but against the Colts, I'm not sure if I want a last-second touchdown there to walk away with that W. They got a tough schedule coming up. Packers, Titans on the way, Giants a divisional game. Is this the start of maybe a little bit of slippage from the Eagles? Cowboys coming at number 3. Again, they mollywopped the Vikings. Massive win. They figured out what Tony Pollard is in this offense now. They got CeeDee Lamb. Dalton Schultz is healthy. And they get Micah Parsons playing full-time pass rushing snaps again. They come in at number 3. Bills at number 2. Kind of a weird game away in not your home stadium. They'll stay at number 2 and still on top. The Kings stay the King. The Kansas City Chiefs with Patrick Mahomes just constantly doing it in different fashions. This time to Travis Kelce, not with the legs, but they stay atop the power rankings. All right. Rip me on Twitter, at Bick Nazar, at Sportsnet650. You can see the full power rankings there. Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah on the way. Full show, because they got a lot to talk about. Bo Horvat landing on Frank Saravelli's trade target list at number 1. They'll detail it all coming up here on the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.